This is from the Midwest City Free Baptist Church.
Well, I would like you to have a look at Proverbs chapter 8. So you can do so now in any way you choose to look at it. One of the ways you might look at it is right here on this here screen, Proverbs chapter 8, some verses thereof. Here's what it says, and then we'll just jump right on to what it's telling us. Does not wisdom call? Starts with a question. Does not wisdom call? Does not understanding raise her voice? On the heights, beside the way, at the crossroads, she takes her stand. Beside the gates in front of the town, at the entrance of the portals, she cries aloud, "To you, O men, I call, and my cry is to the children of man." Talking to us. "O simple ones," still talking to us, "learn prudence." "O fools," definitely talking to us, "learn sense." No offense, okay? This is what it says. "Learn some sense. Hear, for I will speak noble things." And here's the important part of this. "And from my lips will come what is right. For my mouth will utter truth. Wickedness is an abomination to my lips. All the words of my mouth are righteous. There is nothing twisted or crooked in them." That last part's really important. There is nothing twisted or crooked in them. So let's talk a little bit about truth and lies. And since we're in Proverbs, you could call this truth and lies for the wise. All right? Maybe we'll write a little jingle to that. Truth and lies for the wise. Wisdom now here is personified. Personified means makes it as if wisdom's a person. Wisdom is not a person. Right? But as a literary device, wisdom is made as though it's a person, specifically like it's a woman. And sort of like in the Greek, you know, Sophia. If you know anybody named Sophia, her name is wisdom. That's what it means. It's Greek. So wisdom then, like a person, like a woman personified here, is calling out. Sort of like saying, "Hey, hello. Hey, dummy. Over here." He's trying to say, look, all of you people out there, every last one of you, you, all of you, you need to listen. And among other things, wisdom says a lot of things in this book, but among other things, what wisdom says we're focusing on today is that, listen, the words I'm speaking to you are true. I'm not twisting my words. My words aren't crooked in any way. I'm giving you truth. So now, living in the world like we live in the world as we live in it, we are all of us, quite used to words that are, frankly, twisted and crooked, are we not? I mean, this is a regular part of your everyday life, to encounter words, maybe we might say the abusive words, the abusive language, in such a way that it's just, you know, it verges on the truth, it tiptoes around truth, it attempts to sound as true as possible, but, you know, so much of it just ain't true. I mean, are we not all marketed to? Don't you see? How many advertisements a day are you subjected to? How much truth is in advertising? Yeah, you don't need to answer that. I mean, we all know. We're marketed to constantly with words, with also images and other stuff, but a lot of words, and those words, we're just used to them. We come to expect them, right? Anybody go on the internet? Anybody? Anybody ever on social media? Yeah. A whole lot of words flying around. And a whole lot of them are, in some way or another, they're bent. They're kind of like not quite straight ahead. They're not exactly right. There's something wrong with a lot of the words. How about the information, the bigger lanes of information, the big media, the main kind of ways we catch news and opinion and all that. Any twisting going on there? Any mistrust anybody has about that? And rightly so. A lot of words, twisted and crooked and not quite straight, not quite right. Of course, luckily, you know, we got a whole lot of political leaders who speak only gilded truth and nothing else. who tell us exactly how it is at all times. Ha 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 ha. Yeah, I see those looks on your faces because, I mean, this is hardly even something, you know, it is a parody of itself almost. It's almost like they don't even expect we believe them. They just say the stuff that they all supposed to say, that they figure we all say all the time. So over there, they're going to tell you a bunch of nonsense. I'll tell you a bunch of nonsense. And we're just going to try to see who can get your emotions in the right place so that you might vote for us. No, we're just accustomed in our age to hearing endless amounts of words, few of which we can count on and think that they're really true. We sort of have a keen sense of this. We're so familiar now then. Just familiar daily with the abuse of words, the subversion of truth. We've come to expect it. And if we're not careful, you know, we're just jaded about everything. And some younger people you run into, they just sort of have decided, I don't believe anything anybody tells me ever. Because I just think the whole world's just, everybody's lying to me all the time. So then if there are those few people in their life that really are truthful voices, that really care, that speak real truth, they have a hard time breaking through the cynical exterior, the sort of protective shell, because people are, it's like, I'm tired of being lied to and manipulated, so I just can't believe anything anybody tells me. I mean, some people have a kind of history where my parents lied to me all the time. I couldn't get the truth from them. I was manipulated by the people around me that I thought might care for me, and then I learned later that that wasn't true. I haven't had any true friends that didn't sort of turn their back. I was like, at every turn, it's just nobody's ever been honest with me, so I don't believe anybody. Which is one of the ways to get through life. Look, you have choices. You can believe everything everybody says. What does that make you? I mean, it's completely, totally gullible. Just a sucker, completely. And you're not going to last long, are you? If you believe, I just believe everything everybody says. Well, you ain't long for this world then. That's no way to live. Or you could just veer opposite the other way and say, I will believe nothing, ever. But that doesn't help you either. Because then you will miss out on real truth because you threw it out with the garbage. See, you lacked discernment. That is just as much a lack of critical faculties and discernment and wisdom as believing everything. To believe nothing, you wind up in the same place. You wind up in foolishness and confusion. So, whoever you are in life, no matter what, the truth matters and your discernment of it matters. So Proverbs, as we've said before, represents great wisdom and a teacher and a voice of great wisdom, the greatest wisdom, the eminently wise person. That doesn't mean that the wise writer invented these pieces of wisdom. Like he said them for the first time ever, no one ever thought of them before. No, because wisdom is universal. So even as David was pointing out to me this morning, you've got in the words of Job, the core message of Proverbs, that the fear of Yahweh is the beginning of wisdom. Well, I thought the Proverbs made that up. No, they didn't make that up. The Proverbs reflect what is wise. Job predates Solomon by a long shot, we think. And so these are universal truths to those to whom it's been revealed, who have learned it, who have been reminded of it, who keep it close. So this will be a two-parter. What I'm doing here will be a sort of a two-part thing. The first part, I just want to show you that even though a whole lot of people act like other things are more important than truth, and you'll be tempted to give truth sort of the second billing and act like other things matter more than what's true, that is not the case. That this writer, who's wiser than me, wiser than you, this writer says, no, truth is of the utmost. Truth really does matter. And then we'll get to some more stuff next time. But truth matters more than all of its competitors or all of the things that might substitute for it. Because if you can't discern it, you will substitute other things in the place of truth. So I want us just to look at a few things that are in the place of truth. I want to say that truth matters more than these things. And you might notice by looking at these things. You might notice that I've done something here with these points that I don't commonly do. Some of you have told me in the past, you know, how come you don't alliterate your points more? You know, like make all the points start with the same letter. And I sometimes I tend not to try to do it for my own personal reasons. Hey, it has to do with my own background, being raised in church, having heard 10 billion sermons. So I often don't do it. But hey, once in a while it just works. Once in a while it just happens. So if it's natural, I do it. So those of you who need that kind of thing in your life, who need a sermon to have alliterated points, this is for you. Hope you enjoy this. The truth matters more than power. It matters more than your preference. It matters more than popular opinion. It matters more than your personal feelings. And oh yeah, I got a few things to say about each one of these to extrapolate the points a little more. Truth matters more than these things, but these things will be competitors to what is true, to try to take the place or to try to masquerade and say, here's the truth over here. This is how it really is, when really it's not. It's something else. And so truth then is more important than any form of power. Because really, if you think about it, I mean, honestly speaking here, the power to actually change what's actually real, the power to change what is actually true about reality is something that's sort of silly, right? That would be some kind of godlike power if I could actually do that, right? If I could change the very core essence of the way the universe is, I mean, it would take a god to do a thing like that. So no sane person actually literally believes that he or she or any other person could wield that kind of power to actually change what's true. However, we often can fool ourselves into thinking something sort of similar to that, sort of like that, and something sort of like, maybe it's not, oh, I can change what's actually true, I can change the way reality is, but I could change maybe instead, I could change maybe what people think, I could get people to think that what's true isn't, and what's false is true. That's what we're real, that's what people with certain power actually want to do. And as a matter of fact, in some ways, all the power you could have, this would be, in some ways, this is the ultimate power that people would like to get, isn't it? It's the ultimate power, the power over the minds and the thoughts of people. And of course, there have always been people, and there always will be people, who are trying to do that. They could maybe force you to do things, what they want, just by terror. Or maybe, you know, there are all kinds of ways to just get people to do what you want. But better than that, if you could pull it off, would be to actually change the minds of people to make them think what you want them to think. And so political leaders with a lot of power, they may have all the money. They may be controlled. They may have the keys to this, to the bank, the national bank, you know, like all the resources under my control. Now they like that, right? Tyrants like that. But that's not quite good enough. A real tyrant, a real power monger wants more than just control over the resources. They want control over the people. And not just physical control. Like I could box people in. I could have armed guards on every street. I could control people that way. But no, there's something they want more. They want to get their hands on truth itself and change it in the minds of people. Vladimir Lenin said, truth is the most precious thing. That's why we should ration it. That's why we need to ration it. Truth is powerful and precious, and that's why I'd like to control it like I control the national funds and resources. You know what I mean? I want to get truth. I want to get control over that too. And deal it out as I see fit, and redistribute it like I want to redistribute it, and give it as much as I want to give, and tweak it as I see fit. Ironically, the Soviets, with their propaganda newspaper that they had for years, was called in Russian, Pravda. You know what that means? Truth. That's sort of the irony of it, right? Come and read all of the true things we print for you. Yes. Oh yeah, why would we lie to you? No, never. We would never do this to you. Yeah, sure, uh-huh. So the all-powerful supreme government that has all the power, why? When they get control over all the information, why, surely they wouldn't manipulate that. They wouldn't abuse that power, would they? Well, never heard of such a thing. So in Orwell's famous little book, 1984, some of us were alive in 1984. Huh? Can I get a glory hallelujah for the 80s? Oh yeah, woo! Thank you, Paula. Yeah, we all know who we are. Well, Orwell wrote this long before the 80s. Now, he didn't foresee what the 80s were really like. No. He didn't see Wham coming. He would have thought, Wham! That's weird. No, he didn't see all that stuff. See? But what he did think of, sort of imaginatively, was a kind of future he imagined. What if you had an all-powerful state that did, and with technology could sort of achieve these kind of things to control the way people think? So in 1984, there's a great scene where the main character, this guy Winston, they're trying to do what they do to everyone. They're trying to control how he thinks. He resists, so he's interrogated by someone who represents, he's been interrogated for thought crimes, because you could commit thought crimes. You think the wrong way. You're not thinking right. You're not saying things are true that we say are true. And so he's being interrogated, and a couple of interesting scenes where he's supposed to say what the guy wants him to say. So this guy interrogating him named O'Brien, he asked him, what is 2 plus 2? But see, what Winston is supposed to say is 5. Not because Big Brother and the Ministry of Love, as they called it, right, and the state, not because the state honestly thinks 2 plus 2 is 5. The important thing is they want every subject and every citizen to simply say that 2 plus 2 is whatever Big Brother says it is. That's the point. There's another scene where he holds up 4 fingers, and then Winston is supposed to say he sees 5. So something as basic as fundamental basic axioms, the most basic math, as well as the most obvious, observable, plain truth, to control that? See, that's real power. That's a sort of scary level of power. Whatever the party says is what he's supposed to say. And so in any context where this kind of pressure is applied, the wise person has to stand firm, has to say no. Now, in the case of that, there was various psychological and physical tortures being applied because, you know, that's sort of still required. And then you use a few drugs, and it's so hard to do this, you see. There was a clever columnist. You guys remember when this guy that some of us used to know as an Olympian named Bruce Jenner? And then some years ago, he achieved popularity by other means, called reality TV, and being connected to the Kardashian family. And then that wasn't enough popularity, so he got himself in the headlines by becoming a woman. Yeah, you know the story. Well, there were some journalists who were writing about it and kept calling him Bruce Jenner. And then a bunch of people got mad at those journalists and said, "You need to stop saying that. That's not who that is. That person doesn't exist anymore." And one columnist wrote a clever article because, see, in 1984, in the diary, in the private diary of Winston, he writes a famous line. It says, "True freedom is the freedom to say that 2 plus 2 makes 4. And what this columnist wrote was, "True freedom is the freedom to say Bruce Jenner." You see what I mean? Because you can change a lot of things, but we're up against it when we're saying you will change what is real and what is true. One of Orwell's famous lines is, "In times of universal deceit, telling the truth becomes a revolutionary act." It can be pretty revolutionary just to state what seems kind of plainly obvious. But if the tide is turned and suddenly you're not supposed to say that anymore, that can be difficult. Well, power. So political power can do this, but money can do it, fame. Look, those things don't suffice. The fact that you're rich doesn't mean you can change what's true. You can't buy that. You can't buy those sorts of things. Your fame doesn't mean anything either.
Everybody knows who I am. I'm super famous.
But reality is still reality. Incidentally, being a preacher won't suffice either. See, a lot of preachers think that I speak for the Lord. I have authority. Yet only insofar as what you say is backed up by and in accordance with what the true authority says. You get outside of that, you don't have the freedom to wheel and deal what's true. You can't create doctrine at your whim. Who are you? So, you know, we studied a lot of religious leaders, and we spent some Wednesday nights looking at various religious leaders, cult leaders, televangelists, and so on. And you know, we saw this commonly, didn't we? Over and over, they would convince people to believe falsehoods by their charismatic, you know, personalities and how they talk, and I don't know, whatever things people saw and still see in some of these people. And you know, unfortunately, this can be discouraging for us sometimes, because you might have noticed that unfortunately it can often seem to us, like in society at large and even in the churches, that falsehoods and lies sometimes, they often just seem to play better than the truth. Have you noticed that? Like sometimes they do better. And you think, wait a minute, shouldn't the truth win? Shouldn't it be getting more play? Shouldn't it win more votes? But somehow falsehood seems to do better. Jesus said, don't let this shock you too much, more or less. He said, look, light comes into the world, but you know, people seem to prefer darkness. Sometimes people like falsehood better for different reasons than truth. So the great poet James Russell Lowell said, truth forever on the scaffold, wrong forever on the throne. Seems that way, doesn't it? Sometimes. Truth is always under assault. So power doesn't get the job done. Neither does your preference, what you want, what you desire. Israel sometimes, if you read the Old Testament, would decide to worship other gods. You read that story? Not just sometimes, like all the time. Every time you turn around, they run off to worship other gods. Why? Why would they decide that they like the other gods? Is it because the other gods displayed some great power? Or that they encountered these fantastic good reasons to believe that those gods were real? No, they really weren't truth reasons. They didn't run after the other gods for truth reasons, typically, did they? They had other reasons. There were things about the worship of those gods that appealed to their flesh a lot of times, and they liked it better. So they went with preference. I mean, deep down they had to know that Yahweh's the true God and these gods probably aren't real, but those gods were offering things that appealed to the lowest parts, the basest parts of them, and they would do it because they just liked it better. We often make our decisions based on just what we like. But if you disregard what is revealed truth, if you just throw it overboard, then the God that you end up with, surprise, surprise, he'll look a lot like you. You take revealed truth and you say, and it's kind of uncomfortable, I don't always like it. I like some other truths better. I'm going to pretend those were revealed by God, and I'll worship that God. And that God, sort of suspiciously, kind of looks like we look. Could be that we made him in our image. His thinking seems to line up a lot more with ours, because we went with what we like better. But truth is supposed to outrank what we like better. You know, some of the churches with some of the largest followings and the biggest crowds that really pack them in, you think, hallelujah, I love to see that many people. And then, not in all cases, but in some cases, I then hear what's being taught there. And I think, I think I might understand now what the appeal is. You know, because if you tell people what they like and what they want to hear, they say, what? Say more. I like that. Works for politicians too. Huh? Tell me more what I like. Tell me it's all someone else's fault and I'm a victim. Tell me that. Preacher, tell me that God's going to make me rich. I like that part. Tell me that part. The time will come, Paul said, when people will not like what is true and sound. And they'll say, I'm uncomfortable with that. I just don't feel safe anymore in this environment where these things are being said. And what will they do, he said, in those times? They will go find for themselves other people to teach them what those itchy ears want to hear. I got an itch over here. Who will scratch it? Not this guy telling me all this stuff I don't like. No. Wait a minute. This other guy over here. I like, that's soothing. You know, like your dog. You ever itch the dog's ear and he's like, ooh, I like that. Right? That's what we do. I like that. Tell me more. We're creatures of comfort and leisure. We more than any people maybe who ever came before us. Because we have so much more comfort and leisure. I tell you what, the generations that were long before us could not have dreamed of the lives of comfort and leisure we live. You don't think it got to be 102 with high humidity in their lives? Of course it did. But they couldn't walk right inside and walk over to a digital thing with a number and pick the exact temperature they want. Not 68. Not 66. I need 67. I mean, now that's control. Or decide, I just need the pool. And so they just go jump in the pool. I mean, if they happen to be lucky enough to be near a water source, maybe. You see what I mean? Or I need a cold iced tea with lemon, please. Shaken, not stirred. You know? I want it just like I want it. And maybe I even need an ice cream. Now, see, we live pretty good lives. You don't have... You say, well, yeah, rich people, they live in such comfort. Get out of here. All of us are living in it, really. Rich guy just has a bigger pool than you. And more rooms. He just has more square footage to cool to 67 than you got. But you still get to live at 67 if you want to. See what I mean? And so, we are a truth, a culture that truth's cool, it's good, it's all right. But leisure and comfort are better. But we will not find truth just going after that. Sometimes the manipulation of leisure and comfort will lead us away to something other than truth. C.S. Lewis said, if you look for truth, you may find some comfort in the end. But if you just look for comfort, you will get neither comfort nor truth. What he meant is you may get temporary comfort, but in the end you will not get the ultimate comfort and leisure that God designed you for. You've got to get your priorities right. So, not everything that is true, of course, is of immediate comfort. It can seem harsh. You say, well, this can be unloving, though. I mean, come on. Sometimes this is unloving. So, really, what should it be? Should I be truthful or should I be loving? Should I be truthful or should I be loving? The biblical answer to that question is absolutely yes. Yes. Did Jesus love people? Do you think he loved people? Did Jesus always say all the things people liked hearing? No. How did he pull that off? I like the answer that Spurgeon gave once, and they said, oh, how do you reconcile these things? He said, I don't need to reconcile friends. If they're friends, I don't have to reconcile them. There's no animosity here. Jesus was described as full of grace and truth. That's not some contradiction. That's not impossible. He was able to do what we are supposed to do, which is to speak the truth in love. See, you got those two descriptions. Just swap them either way you want. Put love and grace first. Put truth first. The fact is, we're called to both of those things. If you don't think that's possible, then that's something wrong with your thinking. And you're at odds with the Bible. You can take that up with the Word itself. It says you can have both, and you can and should do both of those things. Let me ask you something. Do you want your doctor or your banker to tell you what you'd like to hear? Or do you want your doctor or your banker, and there are others here, to tell you what's true? Or your mechanic, for that matter? You see, we expect truth from some people because when it really gets down to it and it really matters, I need the truth. Your doctor could tell you whatever. I mean, look, he could say, no. You know, how about instead of you don't need chemo. I'll give you candy instead. Candy's tasty. I like candy. That gonna help me? We want truth. Truth. Is medical treatment fun? Man, listen, if it's up to me, I will never see a doctor as long as I live. Ever. I don't like going. I put up with it. I deal with it for as little amount of time as I have to, and then I get out of there. The dentist, same way. But you know what? I go in there. The guy puts the hurt on me, does all this stuff that's uncomfortable I don't like, and I pay him for it, and I thank him for it, and I go back. What am I, some kind of weirdo? Some kind of masochist? No. No, because sometimes what is needed isn't what's comfortable and nice. Chances are, if you've got somebody always telling you what you like to hear, that person is not your friend. That is not loving. That person, chances are, is manipulating you. Proverbs has a whole lot to say about, quote, flattering tongues. And none of it's good. None of it is good. Flannery O'Connor said, "The truth does not change according to our ability to stomach it." Truth does not change according to your ability to stomach it. It is what it is, what it is. And that's just what it is. And so, preference doesn't matter. Popular opinion is not the issue either. Popular opinion is like a current in a river. But see, the wise person is supposed to be rooted. It's like, you know, things with roots don't move. It's supposed to be rooted and grounded. The fool is unmoored, has no roots. And so what happens with a fool is the current moves, and what's the fool do? Just whee! Just drifts with it. Because he's on top of the water. Nothing holds the fool down. Because he's got no deep principles. Got nothing rooting his character into something that's objectively true. And so therefore, he just moves. There is power in the numbers of people. We all might sit here this morning and say, because we're in church, we're in the friendly confines. We all might say, "Well, I don't go with what the world says." I think for myself, it's easy to say. You know, it's harder to do, for all of us to do. There is real power in the numbers. There's real power in social forces. And today this is sped up a lot. It's always been true that the masses have power. The crowd, the mob. The collective voice has power. But that this process is sped up today by things like social media. It's amazing how many opinions you can find out what everyone thinks, like just like that. Like, in other words, you can, you know, the old put your finger in the wind and find out where that used to take time and effort. Now people just pick up their phone and whatever happens, they can find out inside of a few minutes what everybody thinks about it. Like, what's the going opinion on this matter? Hang on, let me see. And they just start scrolling away. Tweet, 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 tweet. I just looked at 100 tweets from various people of various stations in life, some famous and a bunch of my friends and other people, associates I know and co-workers. And I now know, after 5 minutes, what pretty much the going thinking is on this, because I just saw everybody's tweet on the matter. That's how fast you find out what everyone thinks. And so opinions can shift direction suddenly. Like a school of minnows, you know? Right? You see like 100 minnows moving this way. You reach down and try to grab one. You're ever in the shallows? A kid always tries to catch one. But if you so much as budge, what do minnows do? Boom! And they turn course in a millisecond. All of them at the same time. That's our culture right now. One tweet. Boom! Everybody turns. They're all waiting to find out, how do I think about this? And really, from what I can tell, This is sort of like, this has been the main force. The force of this collective thinking, this sort of groupthink, has been the primary force behind a whole lot of the changing views in our culture just in the last 10 years. It hasn't been well thought out arguments. Nah, that's not what's guiding people. People are popular opinion way more than people realize. You know, everyone you talk to will say, well, I think for myself. And most of them are full of it. Most of them, that's a lie. They don't think for themselves. They go with what everyone else thinks. But this is absolutely foolish. In logic, they call this ad populum. Argumentum ad populum. When your argument appeals to just what the popular popular opinion is, it's considered a fallacy. It's bad reasoning. The fact that everybody says so means nothing. Everybody can be wrong. In fact, you know what? Call me overly skeptical. But if anything, when I see all the lemmings go that way, my first instinct is to think that way must be wrong. There's something wrong with that way. When the minnows go that way, my knee-jerk reaction is to say, there's something goofy about that. Because now that may not be fair, frankly, on my part. But I'm almost conditioned now to think that way. Because I think I'm suspicious of wherever the truth mob heads. When the truth mob goes left, I always think something's wrong over on the left there. You know, something's wrong that way. When they move one way, I think it must be the opposite. You know, I quoted before the enigmatic but insightful writer Kierkegaard. You know, he lived in a time, the beginning of mass media. It was all print media, of course. But mass media began with print media. You know, like after they had a printing press, you could mass produce stuff. And the first official periodicals, like this was the first time you could print stuff out. It wasn't just a book, one essay. It was a regular publication, like you could do it every day, like the beginning of newspapers. And what Kierkegaard noticed is he was one of the earliest first critics of mass media, because for the first time he said, a handful of select individuals are now able to tell all of us, A, what's important that we should know and how we're supposed to think about it. And he was always bothered by it. He was always against it. And Kierkegaard wrote this little piece once called, it was entitled, The Crowd is Untruth. That's the title of it, at least in English. The Crowd is Untruth is what he called it. It's an insightful little piece because he was skeptical of the crowd. And we should be too. Popular opinion does not tell us things. And well, what about just me personally? My own personal, I just judge what's true by me. Have you noticed this common phrase you hear a lot of people talking about? Your truth. Stand for your truth. You need to own your truth. You need to believe in your truth. As if truth is a personalized commodity that we each have, our own. By reducing truth really to just a subjective thing, sort of simply what each person thinks or feels. You know what this really is? This really is just a denial of truth outright. I mean, it just rejects the very idea of truth. Truth just doesn't exist at all. Because what they're calling your truth is really merely your opinion. But, of course, nobody believes this. Someone may say they do. I just think there is no truth. Truth doesn't exist. The person who says that, I seriously doubt that person really believes it. If you hang with them long enough and talk with them, you usually find that that person will betray that belief pretty quickly. It's just hard to hold that. It's hard to live that way. And it's a fundamentally problematic and illogical stance anyway, because for starters, that view that there is no statement, the statement that if someone says no statement is objectively true, do you know that that statement applied accurately across the board applies to itself, meaning that it applies to the statement that no statement is objectively true? So if they say everything everyone says is nothing but just a matter of their opinion, my question then I would say, well, thanks for sharing that which is merely your opinion. By your own reckoning, what you just said is nothing but your opinion.
See, the statement, like, is sitting on a branch and sawing it. See what I mean? It commits logical suicide. So nobody believes that, and there's no way that that can be held. Well, Jesus, we should remember in thinking about this, Jesus stood once before a man of power, a powerful Roman governor. And he said to him, this is in John 18, he said to him, "For this purpose I was born, and for this purpose I have come into the world, to bear witness to the truth. And everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice." And do you remember what that powerful Roman governor said?
Quid est veritas.
Quid est veritas. On account of, we presume, that Pilate was speaking his Latin, darling, because he was an educated man. Well, what's that?
What is truth?
Yo, what is truth? Is what that meant. Do you see what he said? Imagine this. A man of power, in powerful position, being told by someone that I come to bear witness to truth, and if you're of the truth, you listen to my voice. And his response is to play the skeptic. His response is to question the very notion of truth, as if he is in a powerful enough position either to subvert truth or recast it or remake it or make it bend to his power. Just imagine that. Of course, Pilate had no idea really. He had no idea really who he was dealing with there. Jesus did not consider truth to just be something that he who has the most money can wield it, change it, alter it, that you put your finger in the wind to decide what it is. No, these other things influence us. They influence all of our culture. They are powerful influences. But the person of wisdom, the person's listening to wisdom, she's out there saying, "Hey, whoa, popular opinion says this, but you need to listen to me. You simpleton, you fool, listen to my voice." Wisdom in that sense is Christ. Christ calls aloud. Christ who said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life."